Treason, Sedition, Rebellion. This is the heritage of the American Patriot. Those revolutionaries who stood on principle to fight against tyranny no matter the cost. And that spirit lives strong today in the activists and freedom fighters who fight against the authoritarian state. Each in their own way, each with their own mission, united for the cause.
I had the idea to run on a platform of fuck the police prior to actually winning the primary.
I mean, AOC is a drama queen and she's full of shit.
They said, you don't get to tell us no, we're the state health department. And I said, hell no.
You brought a freaking guillotine.
People already pushing back in ways that didn't even need any votes to be cast.
I'm not ratting on anybody, and I did what I did, so you're going to have to give me what the law says you have to give me.
You want to make the world a better place? Have some babies and raise them to not be stupid.
Hope I don't get canceled. Talk to you.
These are the people whose stories I'm here to share. I'm Justin O'Donnell, and this is Submersive.
Man, governments are not going to like this shit.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, anarchists, activists, shit posters, and people of the internet, thanks for tuning in to Subversive 79. As always, I'm your host, Justin O'Donnell. And before we get started, just remember, whatever platform you listen on, whether it's YouTube, Live, Odyssey, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Anchor, or on the air at LRN.FM, you can help grow the show by liking, commenting, subscribing, and sharing with your friends. And if you enjoy the content, you can join our insurgency by visiting patreon.com/O'Donnell. Again, that's patreon.com/O'Donnell. And make sure to check out our sponsor, snackswag.com, where you can get all your favorite Subversive podcast merch, including some other brands and designs that are great for t-shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, and more. Again, that's snackswag.com. Check out an awesome new collection of official merch where you can wear your principles literally on your sleeves. And if you want to keep in touch between shows, make sure to follow me on social media and join our community Discord channel where you can chat with other fans of the show at any time. And all these links can be found in the description of the video or podcast you're listening to, so make sure you check them out today. Now, what's on the docket for today? We the People, that's the title, our Constitution. Is it something of inherent value? Is it something, a guiding principle for our culture, our democracy, our great nation? Or is it a worthless piece of paper that Lysander Spooner describes as having no consequence of being existing? Who knows? But many libertarians care an awful lot about what's in the Constitution, what the Constitution says, what it means, and what it protects, especially the Amendments 1 through 10, especially number 2, the one that protects the rest. The security of a free state being necessary. Well, I'm sorry. Whatever. Your guns. Keep your guns. I don't care about the paper. Nobody knows what it means anyways. The Supreme Court can't make up its mind. People can't make up its mind. If I had a time machine, I'd go back and tell the founding fathers to use plain English and a 2-year-old writing level. But here to talk tonight about guns, gun bans, legislation, the role of constitutional offices, and maybe a run for sheriff. In this heated time of debate, heated time of political discourse surrounding assault weapons, machine guns, bump stock, weapons of wars, the dreaded AR-15, and all the things that make the left cry. We got candidate for Merrimack County Sheriff here in New Hampshire, free stater, extraordinaire, new mover, and my friend, Ben Weir. Ben, thanks for joining us tonight. How are you?
I am doing well. However, I'm extremely scared about all the AR-47s and AK-15s that are flying around in public.
I don't even know what an AR-47 is, but I want one.
Same, brother. Same.
Like, I have a tattoo of an AK-47 hybridized with a violin on my leg. Whatever an AR-47 is, that might have to go on the next.
When I was out petitioning, I'm not even joking, there was at least like 3 people who told me like, well, what is your opinion on AR-47s and AK-15s? And they said it just like that. And I'm like, you guys need to get your story straight. Like, this is
one hilarious. An AK-15 sounds like garbage because the AK-103 is the new standard. So come up to date, folks.
Yeah, right?
No, it's wild. We're living in a day and age where I never thought I'd see a day and age where people, especially people, members of Congress who have just become like so stupid asinine, brainwashed, and brain dead that when they lobby for legislation that suits their purposes, whether it's gun bans or what else, whatever else they're fighting for, they just like kind of let reality slip out the window in their testimony. And they say shit that's just absolutely wild. I was watching some of the testimony on HR 1808 before they passed it, and about the assault weapons ban that they just passed in Congress, where some Democratic congressman was talking about these dangerous full auto clips of what a blah, blah, blah. And he just rattled off some nonsense, and it panned to Congressman Thomas Massey. And he just started laughing. He's like, the internet fitting to drag you.
Like, oh, dude, it's their definitions of things and their fear propaganda that they like try to pull out of their butts. Like, dude, it blows my mind. Like, you can't make half of the stuff up, honestly. But it's 100% fear mongering. The way they phrase things, the way they type things out on their bills, everything is designed to manipulate the public. And you know, like, this 50 years ago, this conversation really wouldn't be happening. I mean, they tried to do, you know, like a ban or whatever back during Reagan, but
Ronald Reagan, the father of modern gun control. Let's pause, take a step back, and step back through history here, folks. Ronald Reagan, the darling of the right, the conservative grandfather, the Santa Claus they wish they had. Ronald Reagan, the man that conservatives still hold up as their libertarian ideal of a Republican in the Oval Office, is the father of gun control. Let's take a step back to remember that it was Governor Ronald Reagan in California who invented the notion of modern gun control. And it's because he was a racist piece of shit who wanted to disarm the Black Panthers.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly what it comes down to. I just spent 4 years living in Sacramento. And, you know, I've been a supporter of, I know, right? Money. But, and then you find out that money's not, can't keep you there because they tax it all back away from you. But
what good is money if you can't afford rent?
Or more guns.
Right. I mean, the 22 long rifle will be the currency of the apocalypse. Sorry, all my Bitcoiners out there, but you can't reload it that easily. And it's just a great round for any purpose.
Yeah. No, I'm stocking up on all of it, but I'll say that, you know, I've been a huge fan of like Black Guns Matter, and those guys with what they're doing, you know, getting the word out about how like gun control really has racist origins. It always has. And like, it scares the shit out of Democrats that they're being called racists now, but
they can't fathom it. And they're being called racist by a Black guy too. Maj Torre down in Pennsylvania. He does phenomenal work with Black Guns Matter. It's a great organization, great movement, great push. And like, everybody should check them out. I know they're fundraising for a new education campaign to teach inner city Black folks about guns. Who would have thought that maybe the demographic most abused by the government needs to defend themselves at some point? But, you know, that is an absolute reality. If you look back through history, the history of gun control at its origins and its foundational points was slave laws, was Jim Crow laws to disarm freed slaves and freedmen in the South to keep them from being able to rise up and kill their masters.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, when it comes to minority rights, obviously Ronald Reagan was not your go-to guy. But, you know, so fast forwarding it today, I do think that since minority rights are really like at the focal point of what most modern issues politically are coming down to, like you can say abortion is racist. You can say welfare is racist. You can say gun control is racist and throw it right back in their face. Like it's really,
the one that really scares them is when you talk about how public education is racist.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. But, like, I mean, when it comes to, like, minorities, you know, like Ayn Rand said, you know, you can't say that you're for minorities if you're not for the smallest minority, which is the individual. You know what I mean? So There's that too.
And that really comes down to the root of libertarian philosophy, libertarian ideals. And like when we talk about property, even when Mises folk and like some of the new right wing paleo conservatives kind of in the liberty movement, the liberty sphere, talk about property rights as being the foundation of the libertarian ideals. The reality is the most fundamental property right is your ownership of self, because you as an individual and your individualism and your individual rights and your rights as a entity that exists as an individual amongst the collective is fundamentally the most important. And that's the root of property rights, even, is that you own yourself, and therefore an extension of anything that's a product of your labor, your time, your money is yourself. And what can be your most fundamental right beyond your self-ownership except for your ability to defend yourself?
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, it's kind of scary to think though, too, just over the last several years, how much people are willing to give up of themselves, of their bodily autonomy, yep, to the government. You know, like they were just talking about like, oh, I'm never getting the microchip. Like my coworkers were just having this conversation earlier. Like, I'm never getting a microchip. I was like, dudes, we just spent 2 years of people brainwashing them to get shots. It starts with shots, and then it's going to fast forward to the next one, and then the next one. And then eventually, like, you won't care about your body anymore. You won't care what they put in. They're just going to say, give it to me, and you're going to take their chip, and you're going to scan out your
They won't get the microchip, but the moment Elon Musk tells them the microchip can control the keyboard without touching it, and they can type at the speed they can think, all of a sudden there'll be a line out the door. They won't let the government give them a microchip, but if Amazon wants to give them a microchip that can learn their preferences and order stuff automatically for them that knows they need, they'll be the first ones in the door. Consumers don't care about privacy. Let's face it, privacy is a dead notion in the U.S. It's something we want to protect and care about from a...
You don't care about privacy. We've got phones, dude.
Right.
Like every app controls, like literally tracks every bit of your data. They know every person you talk to. They got access to your microphone and location. Like, what is privacy anymore?
A lot of people talk about privacy as being important, and like we've seen a huge uptick in people using Signal and other encrypted messaging services like Session and WhatsApp to be their primary mode of communication rather than just regular old SMS and MMS. It drives me insane when libertarians, you know, these super privacy-centric people who, like, take Edward Snowden's advice to download Signal, to use encrypted messaging, to protect your data, then all join group chats with people they don't know. Where if you haven't verified your keys and you haven't verified those encryption from end to end, you're not secure.
And, you know, as controversial as the whole Elon Musk buying Twitter thing was, I did think that was like one of the best ideas he had, was to encrypt the messaging and turn it into basically something similar to Signal. However, that will never be now because, you know, we'll see what comes out of that whole situation. But
so here's the thing, is I don't actually trust anyone in the encryption game and the encrypted messaging game. The most popular encrypted messaging app in the world right now is WhatsApp, which is owned by Facebook. Trust Mark Zuckerberg as far as you want to throw him. The fact is, that guy sits in Congress and lobbies about rent-seeking regulations to put his competitors out of business and protect the monopoly on information distribution, while somebody who did far less than him as far as facilitating the drug trade and violencing crime, Ross Ulbricht, sits in prison for running a website that did much the same thing as Facebook. In fact, you can make an argument that more drugs are sold every day on Facebook and Instagram than were ever sold in total on the
Silk Road. You don't even need to go that far. You can have a conversation with your friend, and they'll hear whatever you're talking about, and you're getting an advertisement on your Facebook within 2 minutes.
Right, but you want to trust Mark Zuckerberg with your privacy using WhatsApp? Go ahead. And then on Signal has their own cryptocurrency wallet built into the app. A lot of people don't realize this. You have to go digging for it and find it in the settings, but they use a coin called Mobile Coin. And it's fascinating. It's supposed to be an end-to-end encrypted transaction, supposed to use Signal's messenger protocol to send money back and forth from encrypted wallets. But if you go on Mobile Coin's website, they have a whole big blurb about how they comply with all federal government rules about KYC. It will give your information to the government.
Yeah, see, I didn't know any of that. That's crazy. That's news to me, but that's wow.
So, like if you can, you trust at this point yourself. That's it. That's the reality. And even when you're using these encrypted services, encrypted messengers, like the biggest weak point in any encryption and privacy system is the end user itself, the person. So when the government comes at the person, there's the weak links. Okay, we need your thumbprint to unlock your phone. Every encrypted message is just readable right there. So what's the point of that privacy? What's the point of the privacy if the government can come by force and take it from you anyways? if people aren't willing to defend themselves.
Or have elected sheriffs that will meet ATF at the border and tell them to kick rocks.
That's the start. Now, there was a video going around. I might have it here. I might pull it up at some point. But
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, ATF agents getting tased and arrested by local cops. And like, wow, there's somebody on the ACAP train. I never thought I'd say, well, there's a good cop. But we found one who was arresting feds for doing their jobs. And it's great because in the whole process, the Fed keeps saying, I'm just doing my job. I'm just doing my job. Well, it didn't work at Nuremberg either, asshole. So next on the docket, here we are. We're looking at federal assault weapons bans. House Resolution 1808 passes the United States House of Representatives by 3 votes, with 2 Republicans voting yes and 1 abstaining from the vote. That would have flipped it to a negative vote had those 3 Republicans even just voted party line. But the only reason it was that close is because 5 Democrats, remarkably from Texas, all voted against. But House Resolution 1808, I haven't read the full text. Have you read the full text, Ben?
No. And I doubt most people in Congress have.
I don't. Most people in Congress's staff have. It was 600 some odd pages long. They were given it hours before the vote. It came out of committee with no public hearing, no public testimony, only invited witnesses to testify. And this
came out really snaky too. Like they were like, we're going to table this, and then they had like a meeting at night, and then it was on the table the next day.
That's how Congress does work. That's how Congress does business. If anybody who's ever worked in politics for any amount of period of time knows, House leadership dictates what gets a vote and when it gets a vote. If you're in there and as an elected official, you really don't have a say. But this bill, House Resolution 1808, an act to regulate assault weapons to ensure that the right to keep and bear arms is not unlimited and for other purposes. Let's just unwrap that for a little bit. Let's unravel that for a little bit. To regulate assault weapons, and here's where I think we have a big problem. You brought it up earlier. You mentioned it earlier. I've got a great little graphic here that I think is a hilarious kind of illustration of this problem. What is and is not an assault weapon? Well, according to the ATF, we don't really actually know. ATF's gun classification made easy. Over on the left, we have a completely legal pistol, but if you put a little attachment at the bottom of the pistol, now it's a short-barreled rifle that needs a tax stamp and is classified as an assault rifle. Ben, to the best understanding that you have as someone running for sheriff, a constitutional office here in the state of New Hampshire, a gun nut who's lived under a totalitarian regime and now lives in the free state of New Hampshire, what is an assault rifle?
Okay, so the ATF's definition of assault rifle is essentially anything that has a flash hider, a vertical foregrip, a pistol grip, and a collapsible or adjustable stock.
All of the above or any of the above?
Any of the above. So okay. Living in California, they have like a assault weapons ban, you know, years ago. And I know like the loopholes to get around that. Essentially, if you change your flash hider over to a muzzle brake, if you use an angled foregrip instead of a vertical foregrip, I have like a little bit of an angled grip instead of a pistol grip, which is, you know, it's fine. It's comfortable too. And then for my adjustable stock, I basically put it at the length that I would normally use it at, and I put what's called a stock stop in it. It's like a little rubber piece. It's this big, and it locks it in place. It's like a dollar, and like those.
The crazy part to me is what you're describing here. What I've heard you describe as someone who's intimately familiar with firearms, who has a lot of experience with firearms, 8 years in the military, a gun nut. I've allegedly 3D printed guns. I've shot some of the earliest 3D printed guns ever printed. I've used to have a machine gun license and an FFL. I know my way around a gun. And the United States government spent a lot of money to teach me to know my way around the gun when I was in their service. But everything you've described is cosmetic and does not affect the function of the weapon whatsoever. The rate of fire, the danger, the velocity of the round, the caliper it can shoot, like nothing is affected by any of these characteristics. They are purely aesthetic characteristics. What's the point of banning things based on aesthetic characteristics?
they look scary. Adjustable stock, I guess they say it can make it more concealable. I don't really see a lot of kids carrying AR-15s around in a backpack. Even so, it wouldn't probably fit in all the way. The only thing that I could think is having a muzzle brake instead of a flash hider is kind of, I think, a tactical advantage where it is louder, but it reduces the recoil by like 80%. So I actually prefer a muzzle brake over a flash hider anyway, but that's just me.
Anyone who's ever shot an AR-15 and thinks the recoil is too hard to manage that you need a muzzle brake,
you don't need
power. Yeah. You probably write for the New York Times.
At the same time, I want to shoot as straight as I can every time, sure, and not have to, you know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the reason the AK-47 is the chosen weapon of child soldiers around the globe is not because of its accuracy. It's because of the incredible rate of volume of fire it can put out in such a short period of time and its simplicity and ease of use, because that is an actual machine gun. And that's what people are scared of. In reality, that's what people are scared of when they talk about banning assault weapons with these arbitrary aesthetic characteristics is you always get down to it as, well, you don't need a machine gun. When was the last time an American was able to legally buy a new machine gun?
I mean, I want to say that was probably passed in the 60s or 50s.
1986.
Oh, okay. It was even later than that. I'm surprised it made it that far.
Yeah,
with Ronald Reagan.
Ronald Reagan! Ding, ding, ding. We've got it again. Republicans and the NRA, believe it or not, of all the gun-loving organizations out there, the National Rifle Association lobbied and wrote and drafted a lot of the text that went into the National Firearms Act in 1986.
NRA just means negotiating rights away. I feel like everyone knows that.
Every last day, everybody go join GOAL, your Gun Owners Action League, or Gun Owners of America.
Those of America or Firearms Policy Coalition is fantastic. I'm wearing one of their shirts right now. Save the dogs, abolish the ATF.
And my favorite one, if you really want to end up on a watch list, Jews for the Preservation of Firearms Ownership. That'll land you on some kind of watch list because, I mean, there's no way more to piss people off than identifying as a minority that wants to defend themselves.
Have you been on Twitter much today? Because they just posted this thing about new FBI list of domestic terrorists, and they had Boogaloo on there. They had ANCAPs, anarcho-capitalists, and then they go down this list and there was Threepers and all these people, and they basically just out and out call us domestic terrorists. The FBI does. I tweeted about it earlier.
That's a fantastic thing. I'm going to pull that up and see if we can't find it. But while I'm looking for this and looking for this list, I mean, let's go down this rabbit hole. I think this is a fantastic rabbit hole. One of the big hot topics about gun control in the past year, setting aside this assault weapons ban, which honestly, I don't think passes the Senate anyways. And even if it does, I actually don't think it passes constitutional muster under the current Supreme Court's interpretation of various gun laws. They just shot down the New York State Safe Act, for Christ's sake. They're not going to let this pass. They said a state can't regulate magazine capacity. They're not going to let the feds regulate everything to a T. As much as we hate the Supreme Court here at the Subversive, at least I do, Marbury versus Madison was a coup, and I'll stand by that till the end of time. At least we got somebody who's going to stop this shit show dead in its tracks, and I'm pretty confident on that. But the big thing that we've seen, the big trend in gun control that's been kind of getting by the courts, since been slipping under people's radar, it has a great moral defense, are red flag laws. And what are your feelings on red flag laws, Ben?
Obviously, they're very unconstitutional, but they make you prove your own mental sanity before you can own firearms. You know, the police essentially you just need to have a tip brought up against you of people saying that you might harm somebody or harm yourself, or maybe for me, I have an ANCAP flag flying in my front yard, and they could maybe think that's scary and call the ATF on me, and they could show up and try to take my, luckily New Hampshire doesn't have red flag laws, but in states Texas, Florida, California, there's so many states that have already passed red flag laws.
The self-described free state of Texas that just recently put Florida that just recently put don't tread on me on their license plates. That Florida.
Oh. And, you know, like it's essentially they can come to your house, take your guns away, and then you have to prove to them that you're in like mentally sane and allowed to have a gun before you can get your guns back. And what that means is you are presumed guilty from the very beginning. There is no like, you know, proven guilty. It's you're presumed guilty. And then you have to, it's absolutely insane.
It's absolutely wild to even think about the possibility. Here is the flyer you were referencing earlier. The Federal Bureau of Investigation's Domestic Terrorism Symbols Guide for Militia Violent Extremism. And yeah, they do got Boogaloo, the Punisher skull, which, by the way, if everybody remembers the screenshots from the surveillance footage at Uvalde School District in the middle of a mass shooting, a Uvalde police officer who was too cowardly to confront a shooter and save the lives of children by doing his goddamn job was caught on film checking his text messages, and his screensaver on his phone was the Punisher skull. So maybe he's just a domestic terrorist after all.
I mean, I think cops are more domestic terrorists than anarcho-capitalists. So
absolutely,
and I'm running for sheriff, and I'm telling you that. So,
warrior culture, military themes, both historical and contemporary, Spartans and Valhalla. So, God forbid you're a practicing pagan in this country who keeps to traditional pagan culture and Nordic tradition, or even if you're just like, I don't know, a drunk teenager who really liked guns when you're first in the army and you went and got a goddamn tattoo with the Spartan skull on it because you thought that'd be fun, or maybe you're an athlete who runs the Spartan race every year, but now you're a terrorist.
It gets better. Like, look at what commonly referenced historical imagery is.
The American
don't
flag.
Tread on me.
The Tree of Liberty.
No, it's the Betsy Ross flag. Yeah.
God. Well, folks, you've seen it ridiculous. Here. You've seen it in the wild. The FBI considers those who value freedom, those who embrace the ideals of personal and political liberty, to be terrorists. Terrorists. You're a terrorist, I say, dear child. And red
George
flag
Bush
laws
was right,
are
dude.
Designed to take guns from terrorists.
George Bush was right. They said they would not stop until they get every terrorist. The war on terror will not stop until they get every terrorist in the world. And now they're trying to get them here at home. And like, come and take it, dude.
Come and take it. Just saying that makes you a terrorist. I saw it on the list. Molan Yabe, that's a terrorist catchphrase now. The FBI really, really is going out on a limb here. But let's be honest. Like, I've had this running theory in my own head, no justification, no background or research to justify this, but our running theory is, so the Department of Veterans Affairs and the United States Congress has decided to establish a committee to study veteran suicide and to try and address veteran suicide because it is an actual epidemic, not like COVID-19, which is an endemic common cold virus that's a little bit more potent than the flu. Like, veteran suicide is an actual epidemic that we are suffering through because of the lack of competent mental health treatment given to veterans in this country. And the rate at which veterans kill themselves is so statistically out of the realm of normal compared to the general population that you can absolutely consider it a tragic epidemic, because these are people who, for the most part, signed up for the military in good faith and under good assumptions that they were going to serve the people of this country, protect and defend freedom, and uphold the Constitution as, like, it's a bait and switch. It's a bill of goods. It's a lie, and one of the greatest lies ever told, because Sic Semper Tyrannis is the motto of the Marine Corps. It means always faithful. If you had told Marines before they got the chance to enlist that pledge only went one way and that the government would never return that faith to them for their service, you wouldn't have a government in a position to have these armed forces to leverage against the world. Because people are sold the promise of free college and free healthcare and to be taken care of. You're a hero to your country. And now we're dealing with an epidemic of veteran suicide because of PTSD, chronic pain, chronic mental health issues that are left untreated. And the United States Congress and the Department of Veterans Affairs has decided to study this. And the first things they did was to establish a commission, which they appointed a firearms expert, a VA psychiatrist, and a congressman. to the panel. So, of course, the firearms expert knows nothing but firearms because you're looking for firearms to be the problem here. This is a clear sign that they are looking to blame guns for veteran suicide problems. And when they're also trying to diagnose every veteran that gets out of the Army in their exit interviews and exit physicals with PTSD of any percentage for any time in service, I think this is a giant push to disarm veterans in this country.
Yeah, talk using about red flag laws. Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's, oh man. And that's, I guess, the first I heard about, like, that there's a, that they're doing it this way, but it doesn't surprise me in the least. The problem is that they will scapegoat anything, and they will look for any reason to push the blame off on something other than look within, right? And mental health is a stigma. It's a stigma in the military and in law enforcement and in any kind of emergency services, EMT, firefighters.
Yep.
They suffer traumatic experiences regularly, and that affects them very badly mentally, and it goes untreated. Like, it's something people don't want to talk about. They're kind of scared to mention it. And, you know, I was just talking to, like, Reed Coverdale and also Alou Axelman on their shows and talking about mental health a little bit, and how, like, that's going to be, obviously, that's one of the primary points of my campaign too, is I want to be able to, like, make sure that people are getting treatment that they need. And that, like, people are actually getting their mental health diagnosed, like, by someone responsible, not by, like, one of these crazy VA therapists or firearms experts.
We've entered this crazy parallel universe where mental health and firearm safety have somehow become intimately intertwined as a political issue, when the reality is one's a medical issue and one's a personal property issue. They shouldn't be intertwined at all. They should be separated and looked at distinctly. And maybe we do have some problems with firearms education in this country. What we certainly have problems with mental health treatment and availability of care in this country, and that has nothing to do with saying government should provide it, but there's a lot of things like the American Medical Association limiting the availability of new licenses for practicing doctors, or the monopolies and hegemony of insurance companies that operate under the Affordable Care Act is a unilateral decision maker, being the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, about who's allowed to authorize to bill for mental health treatment services and what treatments and services are available, to the criminalization of psychedelic therapies such as MDMA, LSD, and psilocybin mushrooms, even though they've shown incredible promise in clinical studies. Like, the government has stopped mental health treatment from being effective in every damn way you can, and now they're trying to use their own failure at mental health treatment to disarm a population.
Yeah, I mean, they're running out of ways to try to do this, and that's why they're making this big push right now to try to pass it through the Senate. It's honestly, it's dead on arrival, in my opinion. I don't think it's gonna happen. However, like, I am thankful to live in the free state of New Hampshire, where, like, there's no way that this is gonna hold up here. Like, there's so many guns here.
Like, for those of you who don't know, New Hampshire has the highest rate of machine gun ownership per capita in, I think, the world, not just the country, which is pretty great, pretty defensible, pretty fantastic if you're just an enthusiast and a lover of the sport of sport shooting, or but take that, people down in Texas, you use machine guns to hunt hogs. We use them for fun. So,
yeah, exactly.
But we don't even have a hog problem. But no, to your point, you're running for sheriff. You're running for an elected office, a constitutional office, one of the few elected offices in the state established by the U.S. Constitution, not just the state constitution, and has powers outlined therein. Like, what can you do? Because you're not going to be a legislator. You're not going to be somebody who lobbies and passes bills and laws. And you're not going to be a governor or an executive counselor who can strike down or implement executive orders. You're not going to be a judge who can deal with cases on a case-by-case basis and rule into the efficacy of the law. What can a sheriff actually do to protect people from this overreach and this gross misstep of tyranny?
Well, first of all, a sheriff's elected duty, they take an oath to uphold the United States Constitution, and any gun law over and above the Second Amendment of the Constitution is an infringement on the Second Amendment. So essentially, if I am elected sheriff of Merrimack County, not if, but when I'm elected sheriff of Merrimack County, I can essentially nullify any gun law that infringes on that Second Amendment right, and refuse to enforce it. And any ATF agent that tries to come to Merrimack County's borders, I can tell them to kick rocks. So
wouldn't that be a sight to see?
Oh yeah. I mean, I could single-handedly end civil asset forfeiture. I could, you know, end no-knock warrants. The sheriff has to sign off on warrants. You know, like you're in charge of chain of custody. So, you know, New Hampshire decriminalized marijuana a couple years ago, but for some reason there's still like 1,000 people per year that are ending up having to go to jail for weed possession. So I could essentially take them into my custody and then release them for this victimless crime. And then I was just talking to on the Liberty Block about this too, the environmental case for ending speed traps and how the cops are idling and how much carbon emissions the world will be saving, or the government will be saving from not having cops on the side of the highway trying to
adorable.
Catch people, right?
Absolutely adorable. The environmentalist arguments are, they fall on such deaf ears with me, because usually the people making them are just so ignorant of like environmental science. I used to have a fun game where anytime somebody would bitch at me about climate change, I would ask them if they could name a climate scientist.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And they can't, but I can name Michael Schellenberger or Doss Harberger, or like people I follow and whose research I read on a regular basis, because I'm a fucking nerd. Where like it's all so easily refutable. Like the solution to climate change is real fucking easy. It's out there. People just don't want to talk about nuclear power. But that's an irrelevant conversation. It's a whole different show. And
I can't do that if I was elected sheriff. Like I can't do anything about that. Yeah. You know what I would consider though is, you know, for instance, I made a post about this the other day on my page about how we're at a 9.1 inflation, and inflation is literally a tax. There, as far as I know, there's never been a sheriff in history that has sought to arrest a politician for for wasting taxpayer funds, extorted funding to you know, then go ahead and use it to then extort us even more through inflation tax. You know, I would be willing to look into the possibility of possibly arresting these criminal people that are in suits in the Capitol. So
even let's say hypothetically though that you don't get elected. Let's say that you're not elected. New Hampshire has gone ahead and taken steps to protect its own citizens' gun rights. Even if we don't have constitutional sheriffs, even if we don't have constitutional politicians, we don't have free staters and libertarians in the House of Representatives to pass a law that then got through the Senate that even our statist tyrannical governor, Kristen Noonan, signed into law that there's some debate about what it actually does, but House Resolution 1178, where prohibiting the state from enforcing any federal statute, regulation, or presidential executive order that restricts or regulates the right of the people to keep and bear arms. Why don't you talk about that one for a little bit? I know you're more familiar with it than I am, because I've been kind of caught up with some federal politics in the last few months and haven't paid too close attention here at home. But this one was big news. This one was a big win for liberty in New Hampshire.
It is a big win. And I guess it was also amended a lot. So it's not its original context. It's not like a perfect bill. But sure. It is as
nothing
close
is.
To,
right. A perfect law doesn't exist.
Right. It's as close to gun law nullification as we can hope for right now in this modern culture. So, you know, we're in a spot where, you know, we don't have to recognize on a state level any executive authority that Joe Biden is going to try to pass down on us, or federal law that, I mean, it's so hard because I feel like the bootlickers in Concord, New Hampshire are very likely to still allow the ATF to come through and still investigate people. So it's
absolutely.
I'm not telling people to go out and buy like a bunch of illegal shit. However, I do say that, you know, like we live in the free state of New Hampshire, like be free, live your best life.
3D printer, and, go burr.
Exactly. You know, like actually the 80% lower ban that passed federally, I'm almost positive that it doesn't mention anything about 3D printed guns at all. So this is
the crazy part. A 3D print, an 80% lower ban for, and those unknowledgeable out there, those tuning in, and 80% lower receiver for either an AR-15 or an AK-47. They do exist for both of those and other variants of guns that you can manufacture with parts on that you can order online that aren't serialized parts. I even have a Glock 80% lower somewhere. But these are just hunks of metal. They're not refined pieces of a gun. They're shaped correctly, sure, but you still have to drill. You still have to have a lathe and pressing to turn them into. It requires mechanical work to make them something that can be functionally used as a part of a firearm. They're not a firearm by any means. They are a hunk of metal, literally a paperweight. There was a gun shop I used to frequent when I lived in Massachusetts that sold them as paperweights, as a joke.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like I used to, like, there's a smoke shop down the street from my high school back in the day that sold candlestick holders, and they were just brass knuckles.
Right.
Like, you know what I mean? It's
a so hunk funny. Of metal, and the very fact that 3D printers exist means that hunk of metal, what you're banning is a shape. What you're trying to ban is the existence of a shape, because it doesn't require metal to produce that. A 3D, a lower receiver on an AR-15 is not a component of the rifle that you need to be able to withstand immense pressure or explosive capability. It houses the trigger mechanisms, and you can make it out of plastic functionally. Like so all you're banning is a shape. And 3D printers can manufacture shapes. And that's all it is a shape. And so they're, in effect, trying to ban the knowledge that a shape exists.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's crazy. And, you know, this kind of, like, reminded me of something I forgot to talk about earlier. But like,
it reminds me of that time a kid got arrested for chewing his Pop-Tart into the shape of a gun.
Actually, I never heard that story. That blows my mind. But are you familiar with the Title I? The other
enlighten us.
Weapon. So
any other weapon.
There was, yeah. So essentially, they tried to create a gun that was not a pistol, not a shotgun, and not a rifle. There's no rifling. You know, it was like they tried to like get out of all their qualifications, and they came up with what's called the Title I. Super honestly cool gun. Like a lot of people in California pre-ordered this. They had tens of thousands that were on pre-order, and then California came in and changed the law to include other firearms, which essentially banned the Title I as well. So
God, it's great. So I mean, any other weapon is a classification used by the ATF to just classify anything they can't fit into the rifle, pistol, short barrel rifle, machine gun, shotgun categories. It's like any other weapon, you need a tax stamp for it. And like you can end up getting a pistol classified as an any other weapon if you just put a foregrip on it. Now all of a sudden it's any other weapon because it no longer meets the definition of pistol. I love any other weapons just as like an experience in art, because they're so expressive of what you can do. Like a lot of them are just non-functional, they're just asinine looking, but the ATF had rules, so somebody made it a thing. I don't have it handy. I won't show it off on this stream, but for those of you who follow Forest Mommy's Sunday streams, there was an episode a while back where me and Hex were showing off our any other weapons. And that's a fun show, and you should go check that one out. But Ben has seen my any other weapon. We've taken that out to our range. It's a fun time.
I'll say, like, on the kind of moving back to the 1178 gun nullification thing, I still haven't seen anybody in New Hampshire that's selling suppressors without an ATF tax stamp or NFA tax stamp. Unfortunately,
because the manufacturers are federally licensed,
right?
So it comes down to them not being able to get distribution from their supplier if they don't have a FFL. And if they don't follow federal law, they lose their FFL, which means then they can't get product to sell.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, in terms of nullification, like, I'm sure you could make your own. I'm sure that that's probably a thing. But once again, like, the ATF is not a fan of that kind of stuff, you know. However, push the buttons as far as you want, because the ATF shouldn't exist.
Absolutely. So unfortunately, the only way to challenge these laws and rulings is with the defendant. And until somebody's willing to be that defendant, which means not only do the thing, but do the thing in a way that you know you're going to get caught, arrested, and charged, you don't have grounds to fight it in court.
Right. Which you really don't. Like, you're kind of screwed at that point. So I'm not trying to go to prison, but we are all on watch list, FBI watch list, because we're all NCAPs, domestic right terrorists.
I remember one time a while back, the Gun Owners Action League in Massachusetts had put out a call for potential defendants when they were trying to challenge the assault weapons ban in Massachusetts, where they were, and they ended up getting in trouble with the state because it came down. It's like, you're trying to induce people to commit a felony. He was like, well, yeah, because we don't believe it should be a felony,
right?
So, it's nuts. A right not exercised is the right loss. I think that's the perfect example. If they take it away and you don't exercise it at your own risk, it's gone.
Yeah, so, you're right. I mean, that's the things. Like I said, like, I don't think any gun law should exist. I'm completely, you know, against any kind of stipulation that's put on the purchase. So
the principle then sale, is, you say there's a lot of issues with 1178 because of how it was amended and it didn't really go far enough. To me personally, the biggest issue is in the title of the bill, where it says an act prohibiting the state from enforcing any federal statute, regulation, or presidential executive order that restricts or regulates the right of the people to keep and bear arms. For me personally, the whole bill should have just been, this act prohibits the state from enforcing any federal statute, regulation, or presidential executive order, period.
Yeah,
that's the true anarchist way out. Yeah. Like, I don't care if it's gun control, free speech, Department of Education, Department of Energy, nullify the whole federal government, and that's the approach I want to take.
Yeah, like I like the was it Thomas Massey that did the public education?
The Department of Education, every session he submits a bill, the Department of Education shall cease operations next Friday.
Yeah, that's a perfect bill to me. I don't think it should take 600 pages of, you know, whatever the new assault weapons ban bill looks like, you know, because let's be honest, like, the people who are actually voting, they have not read. They're taking somebody else's word who has maybe read a small portion of it. None of it's going to be in the context of the full bill. So you're really just getting highlights and bits and pieces of what you're voting on. Like, this is, it's crazy. Like, I don't know how anybody in their right mind can ethically vote on something that is just because it's on unpartisan lines. It just blows my mind.
Yeah.
And then you have the Republicans that went against partisan lines, completely screwed us. Like, the two votes that
matter. Yeah, the two votes that matter. It's crazy, because when a bill passes by three votes, that means if two people change their votes, it fails. Because it takes two from the winning side and adds two to the losing side, which then it's a four-vote swing on a three-vote margin.
So I know plenty of Democrats and Republicans that love guns, but at the same time, one, definitely the Democrat Party is not your friend when it comes to guns. But the Republican Party has not done a single freaking thing about protecting your gun rights.
Donald Trump passed more gun control than Barack Obama. Like, Barack Obama was terrible for guns. Barack Obama instituted some of the most draconian backroom gun control I can remember in my life. And people disagree with me on whether or not this classifies as gun control, but it really pisses me off. When Barack Obama was in office, he only actually signed one piece of legislation relating to gun rights, and that was to ease the restrictions prohibiting you from carrying a gun on Amtrak. Because of Barack Obama, you can carry on Amtrak now if you're licensed. Wild. His only piece of legislation he signed increased gun rights. But what he did that wasn't through legislation was he directed the Department of Education, the Department of Transportation, the Department of Energy, NASA, and a whole bunch of other federal agencies to start using their surplus in their budgets at the end of the budget year to just buy ammunition. And they cleared the ammunition market out one year to the point where it was up to $4 or $5 a round for 9mm, and you couldn't find bullets on the shelves of gun stores because they were just bleeding manufacturers dry to build the national stockpile for the federal government. And yeah. The biggest question I came out of that was, why the fuck does the Department of Education have a SWAT team?
Yeah, I mean, that's impressive. Adolf Hitler would be impressed by that.
Yeah, it's a real question to ask. Why does the Department of Education need a billion rounds of ammunition?
Yeah.
It's not like they're going to stop a school shooter with it.
What really blows my mind is that I really think that like 20 years in the future from now, they're going to like put Donald Trump on this pedestal just like they did with Ronald Reagan. And it's going to be the same thing. They're already doing it. Yeah, like they'll never do that with Bush. They'll never do that with Bush.
I have a friend I know who tells me to trust the plan every other day. It's like they're already putting Donald Trump on a pedestal, and they cannot wait for the second coming. They refer to it as the second coming. It's an actual cult, and it terrifies me. Circling back, I want to close the show.
We're in a cult,
but our cult is great. We've got drugs.
Our cult is principled and based.
We're the dark side. Come to us. We have marijuana. But circling back to HR 1808, the Federal Assault Weapons Ban of 2022. The other part of the title that I want to close on this time, I want to get your thoughts on this because this is a much, much heated debate. It's a matter of longstanding jurisprudence dispute, legal dispute, legislative dispute, and even cultural dispute to ensure that the right to keep and bear arms is not unlimited. The United States Supreme Court has held that it's not an unlimited right. The United States Supreme Court has ruled that only weapons in common use are protected and that weapons built specifically and only for military use and that have no non-military application are banned. That's why we don't have short-barreled shotguns. You can't get a sawed-off shotgun because they're designed specifically for trench warfare and they really suck. They're not good. I'm not saying anyone should want a sawed-off shotgun, but if you do, you can't get one because the Supreme Court's upheld the ban on them because they were designed very specifically for military purposes only. The AR-15 has gone through that test and said, well, it's the most common sporting rifle and hunting rifle in the country, so it's clearly in common use. This was the standard used in DC versus Heller, where they said, well, everyone's got handguns for personal defense, so you can't ban them. They're clearly not for military use only. Miniguns are allowed. You can go purchase a minigun. It doesn't have a strict military use because they use them to hunt pigs in Texas and Louisiana. So if you can get a FFL for the machine gun license, you can go purchase a minigun. Like that's allowed. You can even mount it on a helicopter. That sounds like a grand old time to me. But like, what do you think the danger is here in codifying the sentence into law that the right to keep and bear arms is not unlimited? And like, how does that conflict? And how do you rationalize that when the Constitution says shall not be infringed?
Oh, yeah, they're completely contradictory statements. I mean, Joe Biden even said, you know, when he started his presidency, like that the Second Amendment was not absolute, which means that he would be OK with just throwing the whole thing out altogether. But, you know, here's the thing is like they try to say like, you know, civilians were never meant to have weapons of war, blah, blah, blah. But the truth is that like back in the day, civilians owned private warships, like
cannons. Fine. You know what? I accept your deal. I want a cannon. I want a 12-pound gun out my window.
And the bottom line is, the Second Amendment was created to basically balance out from a tyrannical government and allow for the citizens to be able to go back and take their government back if that time comes. And it's kind of like I kind of think of it tied in with the whole join or die cartoon that Benjamin Franklin had, where he has like, you know, the snake that's cut up in multiple pieces, and his idea was, you know, like what happens in South Carolina might not be affecting you right now in Pennsylvania or in New England, but you should care about it because it's going to affect you eventually. Whereas like, that's where I'm at. Like, you know, we have red flag laws in Florida. California is basically a gun lockdown state. You know, we should care about that in New Hampshire too, because they're literally trying to pass now national legislation that would legalize red flag laws and, you know, ban assault weapons by their arbitrary term of assault rifle, which is by no means defined. They can change that definition at any time they want without passing any law to do so. They can literally just change the definition. Yeah, it's completely tyrannical. It's completely contradictory to the Second Amendment. And anybody who cares about personal freedom, even if you don't care about guns, even if your thing is like, you know, you like psychedelics or free, you just focus on free speech, like you should care about every single one of your rights all of the time and the rights for all people all the time, because eventually the ones that you care about the most are going to be encroached upon too. So.
No, I absolutely agree to your point about the purpose of this right is to keep and bear arms, to rise up against the state. The Second Amendment is not about shooting pigs, but it's about shooting pigs, if you get what I'm saying. It's not the food putting on your table, but keeping it there, keeping the redcoats at bay and your congressmen in check. And I'm going to leave everyone with a quote. I've quoted this often in the last few episodes. It's something that's been kind of ringing me. But in a letter from 1787, Thomas Jefferson wrote to William Smith, "The British ministry have been so long hired their gazetters to repeat and model into every form lies about our being an anarchy, that the world has at length believed them. The English nation has believed them. The ministers themselves have come to believe them. And what is more wonderful, we have believed them ourselves. Yet where does this anarchy exist? Where did it ever exist, except in the single instance of Massachusetts? And can history produce an instance of a rebellion so honorably conducted? I say nothing of its motives. They were founded in ignorance, not wickedness. But God forbid we should ever be 20 years without such a rebellion. The people cannot be all and always well informed. The part which is wrong will be discontented in proportion to the importance of the facts they misconceive. And if they remain quiet under such misconceptions, it is a lethargy, the forerunner of death to public liberty. We have had 13 states independent 11 years. There has been one rebellion. That comes to one rebellion in a century and a half for each state. What country before ever existed a century and a half without a rebellion? And what country can preserve its liberties if their rulers are not warned from time to time that their people preserve the spirit of resistance? Let them take arms. The remedy is to set them right as to facts, pardon and pacify them. What signify a mere few lives lost in a century or two? The tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. It is its natural manure. Our convention has been too much impressed by the insurrection of Massachusetts, and in the spur of the moment, they are setting up a kite to keep the henyard in order. I hope in God this article will be rectified before the new constitution is accepted. You ask me if anything transpires here on the subject of America's? Not a word. They are combustible." Ladies and gentlemen, Thomas Jefferson, a founding father, drafter of the Declaration of Independence, and his infinite wisdom and his infinite words, laid it out expressly that the purpose of our right to keep and bear arms was for insurrection, was specifically to take up arms against the government, was specifically to defend oneself from the tyranny and treason of the state. And that's what we're going to leave you with tonight. Ben, where can people follow you, learn more about the campaign, get involved, and how can they help?
I mean, you can see my Twitter handle, the Emo AnCap. I'm not on there very often, honestly, but my website is we're4liberty.org, actually not .com.
Well, I fucked up. Org. Oh, man.
.org, yeah. You can find stuff about my campaign there. You can donate to my campaign. I'm in the process of I just ordered a bunch of political yard signs, so I'm about to plaster the whole county in those. But every dollar helps me to buy more of those and just propagandize the entire county. And then also my Facebook page is just Ben Weir for Merrimack County Sheriff. That's where you'll see all my memes and clips from videos like this. So
awesome. Hey, everybody, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening, following along. Make sure you give the video a big like, a comment, and don't forget to hit that subscribe button. If you like what you see, share it with your friends. If you want to join the insurgency, as always, patreon.com/O'Donnell. You can join our fantastic patrons who keep this show running. As always, big shout outs to Stefan Kinsella, Jeremy Slachy, Mike Dalgish, Jeremy Kaufman, Robert Daniel, Josh Richard, and Antonio Spaghetti. You guys are the best at our top tiers of patrons, keeping the show floating, keeping the show day to day, week to week. You can join them over on patreon.com/O'Donnell. And until next time, be free. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Subversive. Make sure to like, subscribe, and turn on notifications to get alerted every time we go live on YouTube. And make sure to leave some comments and reviews on whatever platform you listen on to let me know what you thought of this episode. And a huge thanks and shout out to our sponsors and the awesome members of the Insurgency on Patreon. If you enjoyed this content, you can join the Insurgency on Patreon by following the links in the description for patreon.com/O'Donnell. And if you can't catch the show live, you can always catch it the next day on YouTube, Odyssey, Anchor, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Breaker, CastBox, and wherever else you listen to your favorite podcast every day. So until next time, everybody, be free.